Greetings once again to the crew of the Gaia Navigation Experiment, to friends, students, and allies scattered across the planet, and anyone else who cares or dares to listen. This is your navigator, John Lash, recording on the evening of February 8th, 2014. This is Nav Briefing number 108, and the title is Defeating Duplicity. Now, I seem to recall sending out a note not too long ago that Nav Briefing number 108 would be on the subject of unconditional love. It so happens that during the Kali shift in the month of January, I was feeling extremely intense tremors of unconditional love and needed to say something about it at that time. Also, I wanted to elucidate, if I could, the subject of unconditional love from a Kalika viewpoint, which is a rather unusual viewpoint for treating that subject, perhaps. Anyway, it hasn't gone away, and I'm sure I'll get back to it before too long. But in view of recent events and the shift into the Matangi mood just about a week ago, I'm picking up signals that need to be reported, signals that need to be interpreted right now. So I decided to rename this briefing and concentrate on some other issues right now at this moment. It's almost midnight here in Spain. It's been raining all day long, a kind of a soft but intense rain. It hasn't yet reached those levels of torrential rain that can happen here in Spain during the winter. But it's raining amply, and that is important, that is welcome, because the rain that comes throughout the winter is what refills the aquifers and guarantees water for the animals to drink and brings the entire landscape to blossom magnificently in the month of May and June. Right now, the almond trees all around these white towns in the Serranía de Ronda are blossoming. They tend to blossom from around the 15th of January into the middle of February. So you see pointillist explosions of pink flush all over the hillsides. Pink flush with a deep magenta hue. And this is the almonds. There are some up above the house near the haunted house above me. And I was just up there the other day making a little inspection, which inspired me to write this haiku. Spring returns to Spain with no regret. Wild black pigs snuffle under almond trees in blossom. It's beautifully comfortable in the rain to be inside, to be warm, safe. It's a little like being on a ship here. The house that I rent, where I live off and on, though not all the time, because I do travel in Europe for my purposes. The house that I rent here is really a summer house, not designed for year-round habitation. But it's pretty snug, and I keep myself warm with a fireplace or butane heaters. So I'm in here now with one of my cats, Rumi. Nikita is downstairs, I think. I'm listening to the sound of the rain outside. It's rather like being on a ship. You know, everyone who's ever been on a ship, particularly a real sailing vessel, like a schooner or a ketch, knows that you live in close quarters on the water. And that applies here to my life. I do live in close quarters. In fact, there's barely enough room in this house for me to keep things going. I've mentioned before the challenge of the work I do. Well, physically speaking, the main challenge is layout space. And although I occupy three rooms and one terrace of the house with the layout of the G&E and other projects, it's barely enough space for me to manage without having work piled on top of other work. So the current solution to that is to take over all the floors of Amergain House and lay out the work down there. So apart from the upper bedroom, which is reserved for whoever may come to be the renting caretaker in the immediate future, apart from the upper bedroom, all the rooms of Amergain are now going to be dedicated to layout. For instance, there'll be an entire room for the layout of Gnostic books, Gnostic and Hermetic materials, including those that are related to the course I gave in Santa Fe in the mid-80s. There'll be an entire table and corner dedicated to the layout of Starbase and astrology for Starbase. Another table for the layout of Gaian mythological sources and Gaian eco-science, and so forth. And I really need to use as much space at Amergain as I can to lay things out so that I can organize and streamline the process of handover. You get the picture? So right now, that's my main priority. I'm setting a course, setting a kind of agenda for myself for the opening months of correction. I will, of course, continue with Celestics and the G&E after March 2014 will shapeshift into the Calico War Party. So I can see all that coming now, along with the spray that's breaking over the bow and the freeloaders who are getting blown out of the rigging. This is how the moment looks from the viewpoint of the navigator. I suspect that some of you may wonder from time to time how I get along and how I live here, almost in total solitude, and how I manage, and so I can give you this glimpse. There's a lot that I'm not talking about. There's a lot that I'm doing that's not related to the G&E or Celestics, such as concerns of screenplays or possible book projects that might generate some income. I don't concern myself with income, as you know, when it comes to the G&E, Celestics, or any other teaching activities I conduct on the internet. But I have a feeling that some positive changes may be forthcoming in correction. If so, it would be possible for me to generate some income, which in turn would go into facilitating what I do and giving me more freedom and more material control of the handover, which is really important. As it is now, on any given day, I am, of course, intensely absorbed in the G&E and Planetary Tantra, not to speak of telestic seances. That's another subject in itself. You know, you can't just turn around on a dime and go into a telestic seance with the assistance of a psychoactive species. You can't just do that and then turn around on another dime and come back. The departure and the reentry process are complicated. So I have that factor to consider. It's I won't say it weighs on me heavily, but it is something. It is a matter of deep concern. Why? Well, quite simply because I am a telestic shaman, and I am the proponent and inceptor, if you will, of Gaian planetary tantra. So I need to practice what I teach. And the conditions for that practice are sometimes precarious. I always have that on my mind day after day. And something else I have on my mind far more than I would like to is housework and everything that it takes in a practical and logistic sense just to maintain myself physically in this environment. That is to say, a never-ending series of mundane tasks and responsibilities, which really tax my patience, I can tell you that. But there's no solution for that except to keep it as simple as possible and to do what's in front of me day by day as it comes up. When it gets in the way of other things I'd prefer to do, I can get a bit cranky. But you know, I don't take it out on anybody. Certainly not on my cats or any animals. I tend to take it out on inanimate objects. I am, you know, half Irish. Now, I don't know if there's anything in this, but it's said that the Irish have strong tempers, and I have an extremely wicked temper, which I really, really have to monitor closely so that I don't unleash it on any innocent passersby. My temper has been really tense coming out of the Kali shift and into the current Matangi shift. In fact, for the last week or so, I have been extremely tense with the tension of the rage and anger that I routinely carry. I mean, you'd think I'd be used to it by now. I never get used to it because it's carrying anger in the way a Calico warrior does is like, you know, tempering a sword. It's like those samurai swords that get of which the metal is folded and pounded as much as 30,000 times in order to get the incomparable edge of the blade. And you know, when you temper metal, you make it red hot in the forge, and then you pound it to temper the steel, and then you plunge it into water, and then you reheat it. And this is how I live with my anger. I'm constantly tempering it. So obviously, while I'm tempering the sword, I'm not using it to slice anyone up the midsection, as I would most happily like to do on some occasions. I would never say that I control my anger. I can't control it. It's too powerful. But it doesn't control me either. So I kind of just, you know, I ride it. And lately I've been riding it very hard. Or maybe it's been riding me hard. I don't know. It's been riding me like a mare. Like a nightmare or a bay mare racing in the black of night. So there you are, some impressions of the life of the Nav at the moment. I'll leave it at that. and move on to the main material of this briefing. Before I do, however, I want to make a couple of acknowledgments. These acknowledgments could have been made weeks ago. Generally, there are some things that I can't remember unless it's written on the wall in front of me in letters that are about 4 inches tall. For instance, I keep forgetting that Diligent Crew members have started a page to keep track of the transcriptions they are making of the NAV briefings so that the log of the GNE can ultimately be published as a chronicle of this great experiment. I keep forgetting that. I forget it so fast that I don't even know that I forgot it. And yet it's something that merits acknowledgement, obviously, from me, because you're doing it for me and for yourselves. Doing something for me I couldn't do for myself, that's for sure. And so I extend my gratitude to everyone involved in that project. And in addition to that, I'd like to point out that over the last 4 months, I've had requests for Not in His Image to be published in different languages, a Serbian, a Turkish, German, Portuguese, whatever. I mean, there are probably 7 or 8 pending requests, either people waiting to be in touch with me in order to proceed with a translation or proceed with finding a foreign publisher, or publishing projects, translations that are already underway, such as the Spanish translation. And I can't remember that any of this is happening. I just can't remember it unless I'm in front of a table where some physical evidence of these events is laid out in front of me. Then I know that something is happening in the physical world. Otherwise, I don't know, and I can't recall it. So I haven't gotten back to some of these people, and I have not, so far, been working with the translation teams or the scouts or agents looking for foreign language publishers, because I would need 2 or 3 other versions of me in order to be able to be doing that. I just want to say I do recognize those developments are happening. I'm not ignoring them. And it's possible that as soon as correction is underway, I may be able to give them more attention than I can right now. Also, I'd like to acknowledge the new Facebook page, Sophia's Reset, which was set up not too long ago. And the 2 admins are longtime students and allies of mine, both of whom I've met in the flesh, one more recently, one going many years back into Santa Fe and California days. So I'm really grateful for that platform, because I know some of you like to use that particular social medium in order to keep abreast of what's happening in Planetary Tantra and to exchange your comments and impressions and questions with each other. There is another Facebook page, Sophia's Correction, which is not operating in any connection with me at all. On the contrary, it's operating from a viewpoint of alienation and estrangement toward me. So I don't know what's on that other page. I haven't looked there. I don't know what people are doing. But if there's something of value there, fine. If there's anything on message regarding planetary tantra, fine. Otherwise, if there's any personal content, I would consider it to be totally insignificant. And I don't approve or endorse whoever is running that other page. I want to make that clear, as if my approval meant anything. All right. So, what about the subject of this briefing? Well, here we are at the 20th minute. And I would like to say that I was contemplating the moon very closely over the last few evenings. Now, it's raining this evening and very cloudy and no stars or constellations. No constellations are visible. The moon is not visible. But upon sighting the crescent moon for the Matangi shift at the beginning of this month, right around the first day of spring, according to Merida's calendar, okay, I watched the moon closely to the first quarter stage, that is to say, the half moon that appears on the seventh day after the new moon. And I watched it with special attention to transception of Dakini instruction. You know, sometimes the motif or theme of a Dakini shift will be vividly defined on the seventh or eighth day, particularly the eighth day, too, because that's a Fibonacci number. And sure enough, I found that to be the case this year. Now, in this practice of planetary tantra, as far as it involves the clairaudient exercise, we should just call it audition, okay? We call it audition. It involves the audition and transception of Dakini instructions, right? Of these subliminal frequencies of your own mind. These are the frequencies of non-elaborated thinking by which the enlightened part of your own mind speaks to the unenlightened part, if you want to put it that way. All right. One of the factors in learning this method is the anticipation of the theme or topic upon which the instruction will be directed. So if you have a question, or if you hold a certain topic in your mind in a questioning manner, then that makes you receptive to receive instruction regarding that question, you see? Well, I was, of course, thinking about Matangi as the one unique Mahavidya and the one unique power of the Shakti cluster who has the ability to defeat the trickster, the malevolent trickster. Now, in one respect, that malevolent trickster is Yaldabaoth, the lord of the clones, the Lord of the Jews in the Abrahamic religions, the Archon Overlord, the Demiurge, is a malevolent trickster. And in another sense, Mephisto, who would, as it were, represent the PR agent for Yaldabaoth, is the trickster. They work together. Mephisto and the Archon Overlord are not the same, but they work together. Mephisto, remember, is a tulpa created by the human imagination itself. It inhabits the endopsyche of the human species, whereas Yaldabaoth, a.k.a. Yahweh, a.k.a. Jehovah, the father god of patriarchy, inhabits the outer reaches of the solar system, exterior to the earth, but not beyond the limits of the solar system itself. The realm of the Archons is actually quite small, cosmically speaking. The realm of the Archons consists of the limits of the solar system, let's say, for the sake of argument, out to the orbit of Pluto. Beyond that, the Archons have no extensible radio frequencies. Their radio frequencies cannot reach and search and scan any of the environing regions of the galactic arm where the solar system is embedded. Did you know that? To them, it's blank because the signal dies out. The signal fades. The Archon signal, the Archon radio scanning sensory apparatus of the Archon hive mind fails at a certain perimeter of the solar system. So they think there's nothing else out there. They think this is the whole cosmos. And they own it and run it and created it, which is a complete illusion that they are allowed to have. Because the Aeon Sophia gave it to them so they could occupy themselves and stay out of her way. While she involved herself with the process of turning into the material body of the planet Earth. Now, once the Earth was formed and the human species emerged on the Earth, which wasn't that long ago, by the way, around the time of the Cambrian explosion, as far as I can tell, the Archons have turned their attention excessively to the Anthropos, the anthropine animal living in the biosphere. So their radio detection frequencies, this is their minds are like cell phones, you know, they operate on these shortwave radio frequencies, are dedicated to surveilling the human species. So we've been under surveillance by the Archons for hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years, which makes the NSA surveillance problem look trivial and ridiculous by comparison, which it is, and it's all a big con and a joke and a distraction anyway, and could be easily turned around and used against those who are surveilling. There's a Calico strategy hinted there, by the way. The kind of thing to be discussed at length in correction. So what am I getting at here? I'm getting at the difference between the Archon Overlord, who is exterior to the Earth, and the Archon Horde, who attempt to penetrate the human psyche by remote viewing and by the foreign installation of salvationist religion and the principle of Zadok, of righteousness, which is actually just envy. Righteousness is nothing but envy. That is how they attack us, and we are under constant attack from the Archons, who are intra-psychic parasites living physically beyond the Earth in the form of a cyborg locust species. And all of this is straightforward Gnostic intel. I'm not making it up, but I am embellishing and elaborating upon the evidence to be found in Gnostic writings. And there's a lot in Gnostic writings about the Archons. A lot. All right. Distinguish the Archon Overlord from Mephisto, who is actually a tulpa or entity generated by the powers of human imagination itself, and who lives in human imagination, but at the same time lives as tulpas live. Go read Alexander David Neal, Magic and Mystery in Tibet. Go read about the tulpa that she generated, who followed their company for a long time, and she couldn't get rid of him. He was a young, jovial monk, I think. The tulpa is physically real. Mephisto, in some mysterious way, is physically real, but not confined necessarily to one particular physical form. Anyway, it's a deeply fascinating subject, isn't it? A Calico war parties sitting around the campfires at night, we'll have the pleasure of discussing the subject of Mephisto as the generations of the black time of innocence transpire. Now, what is in common, what is held in common by both the Archont Overlord and Mephisto is duplicity. Duplicity is their weapon. And so I was thinking about duplicity as I was looking at the quarter moon. You get my picture here? You get the gist? You get how the way it works? And not just thinking about it. Contemplate a subject or theme at a moment when you know the Dakini instruction is pertinent to that theme, and bingo, what do you get? You get subliminal, non-elaborated thought that tells you exactly where it's at. You get Dakini intel, which, however, is nearly impossible to remember unless you're really well-trained. It goes by so fast that you understand it brilliantly, immediately, in the split second that you see it, but it's quite difficult to retain. Anyway, I'd like to give you my paraphrase of a flash of Dakini instruction I received probably as I was standing on the terrace out here a few days ago, gazing up at the perfectly clear night sky. It wasn't raining then. Perfectly clear, black night sky with the glittering diamonds of the constellations and the planet Jupiter making its retrograde loop in the torso of the twins. Twins, duplicity, doubling. You see, doubling is the great mystery of this universe. Not many parallel universes. Two is all it takes. Don't you get that? It only takes two to have parallel universes. We are in a parallel universe dynamic. The mirror reflection of life on the planet Earth in this solar system is happening simultaneously on a planet in the constellation of Andromeda, where M31, or the Andromeda Galaxy, is located. So the control group that mirrors this experiment exists in M31, somewhere, in the spiral arms of that lenticular spiral galaxy. And even modern science, even the astronomers who are dim-witted materialists and think that none of what they see in the universe is actually alive, it's not alive to them, even they recognize that our galaxy is paired with the Andromeda Galaxy, and apparently the two are converging like lovers running across a field of daisies into each other's arms. So duplicity and doubling are themes of the twins. And the mysteries of the double and doubling are extremely profound and without end. As I've said, the greatest kick you'll ever have is bilocation. You are actually bilocated right now. You are bilocated simultaneously here on Earth and in the mirror universe of Earth in M31. But you're not aware of the bilocation. Other forms of bilocation, which I would call local or scattered bilocation, can occur here in the Earth world. On those instances, you would find that you are somewhere, and at the same time, you're fully aware that you are physically somewhere else on this earth at the same moment. I've had that happen. And there are accounts of this bilocation. and they merge into the famous accounts of individuals such as Goethe and Shelley and de Maupassant, who encountered their own doubles, which I've also experienced. Physically, your double in front of you. It's a non-inverted image. It's not like the image of yourself you see in a mirror, which inverts right to left. Your double is not inverted. It looks exactly like you do. And these are profoundly mysterious realities of the universe. And why do they happen? To keep it interesting for the subjects in the universe. To keep it interesting for the gods themselves. You know, the mystery of the universe inheres in the way that it veils itself to itself. And that's what makes it mysterious. If it didn't veil itself, it wouldn't be able to function as a universe, because mystery and mysteriousness is just a word attached to the possibility of infinite playfulness, infinite discovery, loss, recovery, and more discovery, and more recovery, and more loss over and over again. And this is the universe. This is how it actually works. As Alan Watts said, it's the gods playing hide and seek with themselves. And we are the pawns in the game. But we get to experience the majesty of their dynamic of self-veiling magic. We as the fictional creations of their dreaming. So, doubling and duplicity both belong to the constellation of the twins. And as you know, it is in the twins, with Jupiter in the twins, that the last great lesson of the reset is unfolding and continues to unfold now and is coming to a critical moment in the first week in March when Jupiter turns direct. If you look at where Jupiter actually is in the constellations, you'll find that it's made this loop. I originally described the retrograde loop as being around the waist of the twins, but actually, it's interestingly, it's a bit lower. It's more like Jupiter is making a retrograde loop around the pelvis, the lower pelvis, or even the thighs of the twins. And you can observe this any evening when you go out now and look at Jupiter, because it's up there first thing after sunset. Well, it so happens that doubling and duplicity, although they belong to the domain of Idris, who is the Mahavidya connected with the constellation of the twins, right? Bagalamukhi, Idris, those topics are also the speciality of Matangi, because Matangi has a really, really special mission in the Shakti cluster. I've mentioned this before. She is second only to Kali in her power to orient and guide humanity to its own potential, to its own divine capacity. She is second only to Kali in that respect. And of course, she is an emanation of Kali, as all the Mahavidyas are. During January of 2010, I believe it was, at the moment of the earthquake in Haiti, I received the Dakini instruction that Vivi had conferred upon Matangi the role of steering the Shakti cluster, and I had no idea what that meant at the time. But Matangi steers all of the component energies of the Shakti cluster from the surrounding oval, and Vivi directs the powers of the Shakti cluster from within the central pentagram. This is the dynamic. It also became clear to me at that time, the time of the Haiti earthquake, that evil is not just the mirror reversal of good. as Jungians would say, this is entirely wrong. No. Evil is the mirror in which you see your good, but your good is not merely the good side of evil. Good and evil are not merely two sides of the same entity, the same problem. They're not at all. But it's extremely difficult with the binary code of human thinking. Sort of A is A on Aristotelian lines. A is not B, whatever. It's difficult to understand that these are not Jungian polarities. Good and evil are not Jungian polarities. The essential endowment of the human species, of the anthropine animal, is a total goodness and talent, especially talent to play. But evil is a product of human behavior and of the distortion of those talents. But it's not merely the so-called shadow side or dark side of good. This is wrong, and this kind of thinking has to stop. You have to transcend that kind of thinking in order to really get a handle on the problem here. And the problem I'm discussing right now is duplicity. So I want you to concentrate on this word duplicity and think of Matangi as the Mahavidya who is able to defeat duplicity. Now let me give you a definition of duplicity. It doesn't just equate exactly with deception or deceit. It's more complicated than that. It's a compound form of deceit. Here's a definition. One, deceitfulness in speech or conduct, as by speaking or acting in two different ways to different people concerning the same matter. Double dealing. Synonyms, deceit, deception, dissimulation, fraud, guile, hypocrisy, trickery. Okay? So duplicity is double dealing, speaking one thing and meaning another. For instance, here is a paramount example of duplicity. At one moment, a couple of years ago, the Jewish financial gangster Lloyd Blankfein said that he was doing God's work, that the Jewish financiers of the Fed and their cohorts were doing God's work. That is absolutely and total duplicity, because by saying that to the unsuspecting public, he intends one thing. He intends to show absolute contempt for the public, in fact, and to present himself as someone who is an instrument of the divine power on earth. But to those Zads and those Talmudic Jews who know their scripture, he refers to God's work in their perspective. And what is God's work to the Talmudic Zadok Jews? It is to destroy the way of life of all other nations that are not of the chosen ones. To destroy the Goyim, not only to decimate them as a species, but to make it impossible for them to live and to pursue their way of life. That is God's work. And for that is Jehovah's work. That is the work of the Lord of the Archons. That is the supreme work of envy. And the Jews are the agents and instruments of that envy upon this planet, whether they like it or not. All Jews are accessory to it, unfortunately, unless they make a deliberate effort to disown themselves from that agenda. They are all accessory to that agenda, because the underlying motif of the Jewish anti-humanist perspective on humanity is that we don't have what you have. We envy the Goy, but we can't become you, so we're going to destroy you so that you don't have what we can't have. And at this, they are very effective. They have been quite effective, especially since their emancipation. Oh, their emancipation. This is like letting a buck dumping a bucket of cockroaches into your tuna salad. Their emancipation in 1848 in Europe. And they achieved their goals by duplicity. Duplicity doesn't just mean deceiving someone. It doesn't just mean lying. It means using deceit in a double-handed, double-dealing fashion. So, the challenge in correction, once the reset is made by the planetary animal mother, the main challenge of those human animals who live in her story and who are a part of her solution is to see how her solution could be brought to the other part of humanity who doesn't know her story. You get the picture? Because it's a diorthosis. It's a two-way solution. And orthosis can also mean, be translated, it's the basis of the word orthodoxy. Orthosis can be translated as system. So you could say it's a two-system solution. One of the systems is the organization of all those human animals who live in the sacred narrative and practice planetary tantra. That is to say, all those human animals who take the terma for their guru, because there is no human guru. The terma is the guru, remember? They have a system, if you will. They live by a system, by an order of life. That is one part of the solution. But needless to say, those of us who are privileged to belong in that part of her solution wonder how those members of the human species who are not in it with us might also experience correction, don't we? We look at both. They, in the other collective system of correction, whatever that's going to turn out to be, human animals living in the collective system of correction, in the correct collective, social collective aspect of the deorthosis, don't even know that we in the GNE in planetary tantra exist, and they don't even know that they are in correction, but in some sense they do, because they know that something is terribly wrong. And one thing, that's all they need to know, that there's something wrong with the social system in which they live. That's all they need to know in order to be compelled to seek a solution. The F word came into vogue during the 3 years of Sophia's reset, didn't it? The F word, fraud. You hear this word all the time now. Everything is a fraud. The whole financial system is a fraud. The rigging of the currency exchange markets, the rigging of the gold market, the rigging of the currency trading markets, everything in the financial system on this planet is a fraud. Why is that? Because historically speaking, since the Bank of England was founded at the end of the 17th century, the mechanisms of the economy of the nations and the world have been established fraudulently by a cabal of criminal Jewish bankers. That is just a fact. That is not speculation. That is now a well-known fact to some people on this planet, and probably to a growing number of people every single day. So, how do we boil it all down? We are all looking at the same duplicity. Those of us in planetary tantra in the GNE who have all the fantastic tools and assets of our system on board are looking at the same duplicity as the people out in the street are looking at. We're all looking in the same direction. We're looking at the fraud and duplicity of the social system, of the politicians, of the legal system, of the way the financial markets are rigged, the way the economy is rigged, the fraudulence of the media, the fraudulence of the social communication systems, the networks, the news gathering and news disseminating networks, the fraudulence of the medical system, of the pharmaceutical industries. We're all looking at that, whether or not the individual looking knows the sacred narrative of the Aeons of Fire, whether or not they know the three instructions of Planetary Tantra, whether or not they know the wonderful adventure of the GNE, which we are living in behalf of the entire human species. And what we want to know is how to defeat that duplicity. Obviously, the first thing is to see the duplicity. For instance, the duplicity of the Federal Reserve System. That is duplicity, because one, it's not just a lie, but it's a lie that is presented in a double-dealing way. One thing is presented, but it's actually something else that is delivered. It appears to be a government agency, the Fed, but as a matter of fact, it is a private agency holding the government in hostage and holding the entire population in hostage. And so the income taxes of the average American citizen, such as myself, go directly to pay off interest generated by the Federal Reserve banking system, which fraudulently creates fiat money out of nothing and loans it to the American government at interest. And so my labor and my taxes skimmed off my modest resources go to pay on interest on a fraudulent system, and that is duplicity. So needless to say, and that's just one example of the duplicity that has come to light vividly during the 3 years of reset. So obviously, it's necessary for people to see that duplicity is being perpetrated right in front of their faces. But merely exposing it or pointing it out is not enough. It's not nearly enough. Not nearly enough. What we see happening here in the GNE and what the world at large sees happening during the 3 years of reset, which are now drawing to their conclusion, is the constant and continual and massive disclosure of fraud and duplicity. And that continues into correction. What she has done in the 3 years of reset is to establish the conditions for the total and complete overthrow of this duplicity. And so, if we're calling it right here in the GNE, then what's the anticipation? What can we expect to see? We can expect to see the process that has now begun to continue, but even more massively, even in a more spectacular manner. And I use the word spectacular advisedly. I've been thinking lately, been asking myself, how would it be? No, I rephrase it. What would be the evidence that correction is reaching the social collective theater of life? What would be the evidence that the conditions of reset now allow for massive global corrections all through the different zones of human affairs where fraud and duplicity have until now been dominating? What would be the evidence of that? It would be spectacular events. So what we've seen so far is only the hint of what may possibly be spectacular events to come. And as these spectacular events of disclosure and breakdown of the fraudulent system of duplicity on this planet, the many systems of duplicity, because they're multifold, as this happens, well, we can equally expect a massive and violent general reaction. But that's just the problem, you see. because a massive and violent general reaction, for instance, to fraud in the economy of a nation, whether it be Argentina, where they just burned all of the files that could implicate the globalist bankers in criminal indictments, or the corruption in China, and it now turns out that the richest people in China are fleeing their own country to go live in the United States because the USA is to them a more favorable and tolerant atmosphere for corruption than China. You know, while we may continue to see these events, flagrant and spectacular events, the general reaction cannot merely be one of a blind and violent outrage. That will not defeat duplicity. To defeat duplicity, there has to be an aimed offensive against duplicity. This is the message that I got contemplating the quarter moon in the first days of the Matangi shift. And in keeping with the special role of Matangi, as she who knows the trick that defeats the trickster, I ask you to continue with me to contemplate what trick it is that she knows. What is the trick that she knows? Because you can't go up against the duplicity of the world in a naive and innocent way. It's not enough to know that these systems are fraudulent and to stand there and point to the fraudulence. That alone will not defeat duplicity. So there is a trick in Matangi's basket. There is a trick for defeating duplicity. And I'm beginning to think that the perception or definition of this trick, the operative syntax for the trick, if you will, is the single great and paramount lesson that may emerge from the transit of Jupiter through the twins. Now, I will tell you the intel that I got subliminally in the first days of this Matangi shift. There were two parts to the intel. One part said, duplicity is a way to spin a lie. It's the spin of the lie. So you have a lie, and then you spin the lie, and that's duplicity. Then I received the specific insight from Matangi. You can say, it came out of my own mind, but what is my mind? And it was cogent and explicit, and it went like this. The lie that is spun into many forms of duplicity is the fundamental lie that humans are not animals. And that came as a really interesting shock to my mind. Because, you know, I've been talking about the ruling lie. We think about the ruling lie, don't we? We think about the narrative lie. And historically speaking, what is that? What is the most pressing and oppressing narrative lie currently being perpetrated upon the human species? Well, it's the lie of Jewish victimhood, and of the Holocaust legend, and the whole story of the Jews and the Nazis, and the demonization of the Nazis, and the complete demonization of the German people as one of the purposes of that particular lie. So that is the prevailing lie, without any question. That is the prevailing lie in the great historical narrative that is now breaking down before our eyes as correction begins. But I was shocked and startled to understand from that split second of transception that there is an even greater lie operating on this planet. And that is the lie that humans are not animals, just like all other animals. And that lie gets spun into many forms of duplicity. So I ask you to contemplate that bit of instruction or non-elaborated Dakini insight. I won't comment on it. I'll allow you and invite you, not allow you, I'll invite you to consider it yourself and see what you can draw from that. I draw a lot from that. And I'm going to continue to refer to that insight in upcoming briefings. So now to conclude this briefing, in the last 10 or 15 minutes, I want to refer you to a document that you can find on the internet. You can easily download this document in PDF form. It's called The Synagogue of Satan, and the author is Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, as in the film director Alfred Hitchcock. The Synagogue of Satan is a compilation of quotes and historical references. It begins in 740 with the formation of the Khazarian Empire and the conversion of the Jews, the conversion of the Khazars to Judaism, which was a massive act of duplicity. Another obvious form of duplicity is that people today who stand before the world to represent the Jewish nation or the Jewish people, such as Benjamin Netanyahu, the president of Israel, are Khazarian Jews. They are not actual Jews of the Middle East. They are not Semites. They are Asiatic Turks, in fact. Asiatic Turks who have lived for centuries in Eastern Europe or in the boundary lands between Eastern Europe and the what is now Tajikistan and those parts of the world around the Caspian Sea. And of course, it was north of the Caspian Sea and the Black Sea that the Empire of Khazaria was formed in the 8th century CE. So the compilation or inventory of Hitchcock begins in 1740 and comes forward all the way to 2006. Now, this is not a book that he has written. There is very little of his writing in the book. It is actually just a compilation of quotations taken from various works. And many of the quotations are from those who represent themselves as Jewish and as propounding the Jewish agenda, the Jewish cause, or Jewish identity politics, or whatever you want to call it. So you find in this inventory statements about the Jews made by the Jews themselves on their own terms, and many statements made about them equally by others who have observed their behaviors. And so it goes with this long document, ranging over a period of 1,300 years. Now, significantly, I would point out that the father of the Rothschild family, who founded the criminal banking mafia of the Rothschilds, let's say the Jewish equivalent to Don Corleone, if you will, was born in 1744. Does that date ring a bell? In 2008, when I got the term of Gaia Awakening, I also came to realize that the planetary animal mother is waking up in her dream, in her aeonic dreaming. She is not waking up from the aeonic dreaming, in which case all life on this planet would be terminated immediately or transformed into some other form of life which is inconceivable. No. The Ansophia wakes up in her dream, as you do if you are a lucid dreamer. And she began to wake up around in the 1740s or 1750s, and assumed her first dream identity in the fugue of her dream identities at the time of the French Revolution. It was, what does it mean to say that the Aeon Sophia becomes lucid in her aeonic dreaming? It means that she has a breakthrough out of her autism due to material immanence in the planetary body that allows her to interface with the imaginative constructs of the human animal as it constructs history. And her imagination and her aeonic disposition, if you will, attracts her to certain fictions and creations in the course of history where she finds her identity in the historical process. And the first one of those was in the figure of Justine by the Marquis de Sade. And thereupon follow six others unto the current identical node of her dreaming, which is as the Tibetan style Dakini Vajravilasi. So it's pretty remarkable that in the 1740s, which is also around the time that Jigme Lingpa received the powerful terma of the Longchen Nigtig, the first of the criminal Rothschild banking families was born, the founder of the Rothschild banking empire, which is an international mafia of crime, extortion, murder, all driven by envy and driven by an agenda with the purpose of destroying the life of the Goyim, destroying the life of all nations who are not party to the divine plan and the chosenness of the Zads. The Gnostics warned us about this. And in correction, what they warned becomes obvious and evident to many people. So in correction, you can say that those of us in the GNE, with our special and privileged Gnostic intel and our visionary skills in planetary tantra, are looking at the same duplicity as every other human animal on this planet who cares and dares to look at it. When you look at this record of Hitchcock, I have to say, I don't know how it would be possible to compile a more massive inventory of duplicity. It just goes on and on and on. It's jaw-dropping. And one of the amazing things that I find in running through this compilation is that there have been many instances, numerous instances, I won't say thousands, but there have been many, many instances when prominent people have nailed the Zadokite Talmudic Jews on their game, have exposed them, and have pointed to the nature of their duplicity in no uncertain terms. And it happens over and over again in public speeches of political figures, in the writings of certain artists, certain commentators on the times, and things of that sort. And you can read all of these quotations and observations in this massive compilation called The Synagogue of Satan. Just to peruse through it for an hour and a half or an hour is a staggering exercise. But again, I want to point out that detecting and exposing the duplicity is not enough to defeat it. So how is it to be defeated? This is the question to contemplate and savor during the current Matangi shift, and any time at any future time when it becomes relevant. Now, obviously, there is no single and definitive answer to that question. Duplicity has to be confronted and faced and defeated on many fronts, doesn't it? Nevertheless, there could be an overall strategy for doing that, for doing so. an overall strategy to defeat duplicity. I'm convinced that there is such a strategy and that it is held in the instruction of Matangi. Her instruction on this matter is not simply going to be available during her shift from here on out. It's going to be constantly available and constantly elaborating itself in the human mind. Now, I've come to realize recently that I tend to get overwhelmed with the GNE when I slip into the mistake of thinking that I am required to prescribe things to you or to present you with solutions. This is not the case. Now, I may occasionally present you with a solution. If I come up with one, I'd certainly be happy to share it with you, as you do with me generously in your emails and messages. But essentially, it's not my responsibility to prescribe how to tackle an issue such as this one. I'm fulfilling my role as navigator simply by providing the syntax to make it possible to grasp the situation, to meet the challenge, the correct syntax that steadies you into meeting the challenge. This is my role, but I don't necessarily have to define explicitly how to handle the challenge, because you yourself have the capacity to do that, and it's part of your participation in her correction to do just that. I would, however, in concluding this briefing, love to share with you the formative insight, the inceptive Bodhi, as they would call it in the old Buddhist jargon, the inceptive Bodhi regarding a general tactic for defeating duplicity. Once duplicity has been detected and exposed, then you can meet it frontally. You can confront it. But it is not enough to confront it with its own exposure. In fact, when you read through the compilation in the Synagogue of Satan, you might come to the same conclusion that I came to, which I was discussing with Kundry the other day. We were looking over this astonishing compilation of quotations, and we realized that the agenda of duplicity among the Zadokite Jews, especially in regards to the global financial mafia of the Rothschilds, has been exposed over and over again. And yet it continues to roll on like a steam train. And so, there must be another step. The confrontation with duplicity involves another step. And what is that? I can give you the general strategic insight regarding that step. What you have to do, and this would be a Matangi strategy, is to hit the duplicity and those who carry the duplicity with a counteracting truth. You see, the exposure of the duplicity doesn't matter to those who are perpetrating it. This is a lesson that I've learned in the last few years. And I think some of you as well may have come to the same conclusion as me. When you read the article written some years ago before Reset, I think it was written around 2004 or 5 maybe, Joel Stein, "Yes, the Jews control Hollywood and the media, and we don't care if anybody knows it as long as we can still run it." It's like they don't care if you see the duplicity of what they're doing, because they know that merely seeing it won't stop it. They know that, and you don't know that yet. And there are many people who don't know that, unfortunately. Many well-intended people who have dedicated their lives as independent researchers to expose the fraud and duplicity in the many systems of human endeavor constantly say that exposing it is going to bring it down. They're wrong. Exposing it does not bring it down. What does it take to bring it down? What does it take to defeat duplicity? You have to hit it with a countermanding truth. You have to bring an independent truth to the lie that is being spun in your face. And you have to stand on that truth and live that truth with the power of your life. And when that happens, one human animal at a time, duplicity can be defeated. Now, in my own life, by writing Not in His Image, which was written in a state of white hot anger and boiling rage, by writing that, I put my entire life into an offensive move on duplicity. Not in His Image does not merely expose the duplicity of the Archons and their agents and instruments, the Zadokite Jews, and all of their various variations, which are like mutations of the cockroach. It does not merely expose that duplicity, according to the Gnostic intel from which I drew, but it confronts that duplicity with a countermanding, countervailing truth. You have to hit back with truth against duplicity. Pointing to it and exposing it won't do it. And as many instances show, the chutzpah of Joel Stein being merely one of them, as many instances show, they don't care if you know that they are cheating you out of your life. They don't care. In fact, they enjoy that you know it. They call it the revelation of the method. Because the revelation of the method is a technique of psychosocial mind control by which the perpetrators instill in their victims a sense of helplessness. You see the revelation of the method enacted by a perpetrator in many famous films about serial killers, such as Seven, and what is the one with Sigourney Weaver? Copycat. Okay? The serial killer in those films enjoys informing his victims of what he is going to do to them and how he is going to harm them, because it increases the sense of helplessness in the victim. And perpetrators of that kind, psychopaths and murderous, demented human animals, get a kick from the helplessness of their victims. A sane and healthy human animal such as myself would never get a kick from the helplessness of someone I was attacking. I would never attack someone who was helpless. I would only attack someone who was capable of defending themselves, even if only badly. But it's part of the thrill of the perpetrator to intensify the helplessness. And unfortunately, up until now, to some degree, the exposés of fraud and duplicity in the world have fallen into that trap. But once we know that defeating duplicity requires an offensive move, everything changes. And that offensive move is hitting it with a countervailing, countermanding truth. What is the countermanding truth in Not in His Image? Well, it's the truth of telestic shamanism and the sacred narrative of the Aeons of Fire. That is the countermanding truth to be used offensively against patriarchal and Abrahamic religion, you see? And in every single instance where fraud and duplicity must be confronted, the same strategy applies, and this is the Matangi strategy. Hit them with a countermanding truth, but make that truth real and invincible, because you make your life itself the instrument of that truth, whatever it may be.